Krishna, of all wonders, planted pearls from which pearl trees came about with big fruit-like pearls. He had done this because he had developed a desire to decorate his two cows for the occasion of the Lakshmi Puja. And when the beautiful gopis, who actually had pearls in their possessions, pearls which Krishna wanted, and denied him even a small or the smallest of pearls, Krishna thought, I will produce my own pearls. When the proud gopis had seen how Krishna performed this miracle, they thought, let us also do it. But they thought on a second thought, it's not so easy to, I mean, how do pearls grow from soil, from earth? Not possible. They thought Krishna knew some mantras or some herbs, something which gave him extra power to do such wonders. So they asked the disciple of Purnamasi, Nandimukhi, how Krishna did it. And Nandimukhi said, Krishna didn't do it at all. It was the ground of Vrindavan, the earth, the sacred dust, which performed the impossible task. So the gopis thought, well, the earth is there. Let us also do it. And they took all their pearls. They emptied out the whole household. They took all the wealth, brought it to some fields, and then planted them. Thrice a day, they brought the best of milk, butter, and fragrant ghee to water, or to milk, or to butter, or to ghee the pearls. All pearls which the gopis could find unguarded in their homes and on their bodies were planted in the ground of Vrindavan. After a few days, however, these proud gopis looked onto their pearl seeds, and to their dismay they saw that tiny thorny twigs had sprouted in their fields. Also they saw the cowherd boys who giggled and laughed and derided them through various puns. One day, now the problem gets aggravated. The elderly cowherd men found out that their extremely valuable pearls and a lot of their dairy products had disappeared from their homes, having been used by their daughters for growing pearl trees. The elderly gopis, the wives of the cowherd men, calmed the worries of their husband by reassuring them that they could make a big profit once these pearls had grown into pearl trees from Vrindavan's soils. But one day, the illusion, the bubble of illusion, burst open when Vishakha inspected the sprouts and then whispered into Sakhi's ear, oh Sakhi, I don't think these sprouts will ever make it. They are not quite the same as Krishna's sprouts. I don't know what will happen to us now. Let us quickly fence our fears well from the eyes of all the coward community. So they built the best of wooden fences around the pearl fields. After a few days, the vines that had sprung up from the fields of Radha and the other gopis showed clear signs of being thorny twigs. And soon it became known throughout Gokul. All the animals said it. The birds said it. The insects whispered it. And the cowherd boys laughed about it. Thorny twigs had sprung up from the gopis' fields. No pear trees. Krishna smiled, a contented smile. And then he sent his friends to the assembly of Radhika and let them jokingly ask for pearls. The gopis proudly replied, "We were not so foolish to change our caste. We are cowherd people, not pearl planters. If we had really planted pearls, the whole of Braj would be filled by now with pearls from these trees now. But only you, Krishna, could give up his own caste profession of cowherding for a lower profession of pearl planting. We have not changed our caste." Hearing this, Krishna smiled more and lavishly decorated all his friends, all the cows, all the calves, all the oxen, all the bullocks, all the sheep, goats, and even all the naughty monkeys of Vrindavan with ornaments and garlanded them with his pearls. As a sandalwood tree is decorated with fragrant flowers and branches, the Lord's body and the body of all his associates was now decorated with valuable jewels and pearls. The gopis were ashamed that they didn't have any ornaments. They were gone, lying in the ground. And afraid of their parents' anger over losing their wealth of pearls, the gopis began to think, "What to do now? It's all Nandi Mukhi's fault. That traitor has taken Krishna's side." They went to Nandi Mukhi and chastised her severely. But Nandi Mukhi answered, "Sakis, I swear on all my penances that I did not deceive you. It's your own fault. Because you were so proud that you made a lot of noise about planting those pearls, like beating a drum, that Krishna and his friends have heard it. You have openly planted all these pearls in a field without keeping even one guard there. Krishna, the guru of deceivers, must have bribed Madhu Mangal with sweet rice to pick the pearls that had already sprung up. Madhu Mangal stole these pearls and instead planted thorny seeds in their place and threw the pearls into the deep water of the Yamuna. That's it." The Sakis called out, "Oh, ascetic of Kali Yuga, just wait, just wait." Thus they went home and further considered what to do. Radhika said, "We are so much afraid of our superiors. We can only pacify their anger by showing them some pearls. Let's buy these rarely attained pearls from Krishna. Think of a way, please. Think of a way. how we can do it. The beautiful Radharani was helpless in this Leela. Krishna had worked magic. So she sent Chandramukhi and Kanchanalata with some gold to buy some pearls from Krishna for the right price. Krishna, however, was not very willing to give his pearls. He said, many gems are available on the market of Mathura. Go there, please. The Sakis thought, this is too far. They were ready to pay even more price than elsewhere. But Krishna very impudently desired a very high price and also an intimate price of embraces from them. This was unacceptable. All the gopis came and asked Subal to mediate and counsel for the right price. Thus a vine of very sweet conversation, intertwined by fragrant flowers of bold words, began to grow, and Krishna determined the price for each.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.
wanted high price. He wanted absolute surrender. The copies, not ready to pay their part, began to conceive of a very deep argument. An argument which would be make Krishna bereft of all the pearls altogether with one argument. They considered, Vrindavan is actually the land of Radhika. Krishna is not owning these pearls. Radhika owns them. And he has to pay a tax for each of the pearls which he grew in the land of Radha. Lalita blissfully narrated Srimati Radhika's coronation ceremony that everybody in Braj witnessed and which we will hear about tomorrow at 7:30. Krishna, however, was not so easy to give in. It was a heavy argument. But he claimed so veranity over some of the kingdom of Vrindavan, because he argued, my name is Nanda Nandana, the son of the king. I am the prince here. But Lalita replied, you conniving liar, you have no connection with Vrindavan. You come actually from the Brihadvan Gokula. That's your ancestral home. So Bhad said, this is going to become a heavy argument, Lalita. We need a mediator here. I will be the mediator and only speak the absolute truth. Lalita said, okay, Subhad. Your friend Krishna is no one in connection to Radharani. He is asking since a long time to chant the Radha Mantra with the sole aim of attaining the service of Sri Radhika's lotus feet. Have you forgotten this? My dear devotees, this is actually a fact. Sometimes Krishna sits alone under a tree in Vrindavan, a Kadamba tree, and with tears in his eyes chants Radha, 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 which shows that he considers Radharani, his ultimate deity, and himself to be a servant. So how could he own Radharani's land? He was a servant of Radha. Nandi Mukhi said, I'm the referee of this argument. It's an interesting argument. Can you gopis please give some more evidence that Radharani is actually the owner of the land of Vrindavan? Because if she is, then everything in Vrindavan is hers and not Krishna's, including the pearls, which Krishna has grown here impudently. Vrindadevi spoke up. I can very easily give an evidence how Radharani is not only the owner of Vrindavan, but how the land of Vrindavan is actually non-different from Radha. Listen very carefully, your intelligence highly in use. Now Vrindadevi speaks. My dear devotees, it's a highly intelligent argument. You must also listen with your intelligence in super use. The special luster and fragrance, says Brinda, of the Champaka flower vines, which are golden, and the lust of the golden Utica vines, which are also golden, comes from the body of Radharani. The lotus flowers here in Vrindavan have their shape from the face of Radharani. Vrindavan's lovely trembling vines, which move in the fresh breeze from Yamuna, have become identical with Radha's arms, the beautiful beaks of the parrots have become identical with Radha's nose, which is as beautiful as sesame flowers. And in this way, Radharani has given her luster to the land of Vrindavan. In fact, Vrindavan is her expansion. It's not different from her. How can Krishna own anything in Vrindavan? So Nandi Mukhi said, okay, you may say this, but can you please give some shastric proof that Radharani and not Krishna is the owner of Vrindavan? Vrindadevi immediately quoted, in the various regions, different goddesses are in charge, but the Puranic statement is there. It says, Radha Vrindavane Vane. Sri Radha reigns over the Vrindavan forest.
All the gopis don't like it.
What do you have to say now? Cowherd boys. All the cowherd boys looked at Madhu Mangal, who could not think so clearly because he was digesting all the lies. Finally, Madhu Mangal, who is a Brahmana, got some good sense and proudly replied, oh proud gopis, you have forgotten the great Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the crown of all the Puranas, where it proclaims that Vrindavan is Krishnavan, the forest of Krishna. Lalita thought very quickly and then expressed what was in Radharani's mind. She said, yes, Gopal Tapani Upanishad calls Vrindavan Krishnavan, but Krishnavan doesn't mean the forest of Krishna, it means only a dark forest, nothing more. This gets intense. And isn't the Banyan forest on the bank of the Yamuna very dark? Isn't Parashali a dark forest? Isn't the Mount of Govardhan sometimes very dark? In this way, the Sakis decorated Krishna with a garland of blue lotus flowers in the form of their sidelong glances. And they joked with Krishna, and Krishna enjoyed the various skillful explanations and sweet talks of the gopis. Now, all this time, my dear devotees, Srimati Radharani was not clearly visible to Krishna. Radha stayed nearby in a grove of flowers and was delighted with the various ecstasies, because sometimes she could shift the flowers aside and see Krishna, and at that time her wonderful fragrance wafted through the air of Vrindavan and came to Krishna's attention, who very, very happily enjoyed it. Then the gopi said, enough with this this declaration, we have clearly showed by logic and by Shastra that the forest of Vrindavan belongs to our Radharani. Now it's up to Krishna to act dharmically or undharmically, as he usually does. Then they left and went to a beautiful Bakula grove near the banks of Radhakund. Krishna smiled. He wanted to be a little bit for himself. He blissfully collected all the pearls, and from the best of the pearls, he single-handedly, without anyone's help, made ornaments for each of Srimati Radharani's limbs with a wonderful artistic dexterity. He placed these ornaments in a golden basket and marked it with Radha's name, which he hand-wrote. In the same way, he manufactured similar ornaments for the Sakis like Lalita and Vishakha and placed them in separate boxes and also marked these individual boxes with the names of the respective Sakis. Krishna gave many of the most excellent pearls to Nandi Mukhi, to Madhu Mangal, Subal, and his cowherd friends Vasant and Kokil. These cowherd boys dispatched the ornaments to the Mandir of Flowers at Sri Radhakund, where the gopis were staying. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus becomes the servant of his dear devotees and freely sends them his affection and love in the form of golden baskets and caskets and boxes full with the best of all pearls, which has never been seen in this world. Radhika and the Sakis smiled and blissfully accepted these gifts and decorated themselves. They fed Madhu Mangal with sweet rice and lovingly satisfied Subal and the other boys with scents, sandalwood and betel leaves. Krishna decorated himself with a fragrant garland of golden utica flowers which the gopis had made for him as a return gift, and he enjoyed the other gifts that had been sent by the Sakis. Then he joined his dear friends to herd the cows near Govardhan Hill, where the Govardhan retreat takes place. The Sakis greatly satisfied their husbands and other superiors by bringing them a huge amount of the most wonderful pearls. Then again, they returned to the bank of Radhakund, where they met Sri Radha and blissfully spent their time discussing Krishna's ever-sweet joking conversations with each other. And they reminded each other, "Do you remember when we had no other chance? When we had given away all our pearls to the grounds of Vrindavan, how Krishna made fun of us by decorating all the monkeys with pearls, which looked even more splendid than us?" The gopis laughed. "Oh, my dear devotees, the divine energy of the Lord, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is so very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered their ears and thoughts unto Krishna can easily cross beyond it. My dear devotees, be careful not to be socially and mentally touched by others. Singing the holy name of Radha and Krishna is your highest meditation. Don't seek any other truth than Radha and Krishna. Just think of pure devotion and be attached to the opinion of the people of Braj, for this truth is the greatest